In today's episode, we have a special conversation with Avita Morin about small triumphs to building leadership. Avita is the CEO of Rise Recovery, and she has over 15 years of experience in the civic and nonprofit sector with vulnerable and marginalized groups. Under her leadership, Rise Recovery has thrived, raising over $8.5 million for San Antonio's first family and youth support center for recovery. She spearheaded initiatives like the 24-hour Bexar County Helpline and partnerships with local schools, driven by a mission to impact behavioral and mental health policies and services. Beyond her professional achievements, Avita is recognized for her community service and leadership, serving on several boards and receiving accolades from prominent publications and organizations. She finds joy in her family, married to her best friend, and raising two vibrant children. That being said, let's get started. Thank you again, Avita, for being a part of the Hidden Potential podcast with me. I got to say that almost nearly every person that I meet that does know you always has incredible things to say. And when I first met you a couple months back, I feel like we had a great conversation. You're very personable and very authentic. It's something of a very unique quality that not a lot of people necessarily have naturally. And to kind of just get started, can you share a little bit about yourself and what it is that you do?
Sure. What is it that I do? Well, I am I'm a social worker by trade. So my name is Avita Morin. I'm a San Antonio native, and I am a lover of nonprofits, of service work, of leadership, and I have been overseeing Rise Recovery, which is a nonprofit in San Antonio, for over 8 years now. I can't believe it's been that long.
Wow, that's great. And when I first heard of Rise Recovery, it seemed like such a special special thing to be able to have within San Antonio. It almost felt like, it's probably more so my ignorance, but it felt like San Antonio's best kept secret. Mm-hmm. How you came about becoming the CEO, I think that when young people hear like acronyms such as that, they often get the impression that there's this almost like an impossible journey for them to go on. Can you kind of like share a little bit of what it was like for you stepping into that leadership role, and even maybe where that leadership desire started in your life?
That is such a great point. I absolutely love talking with young people, with kids who are fresh out of college. I have one myself. In his early 20s, just graduated from marketing in UTSA. And so, that journey is such a special journey and such a great chapter of someone's life, because they've just, completed this significant achievement. But then there's this, and now what? What do I do with this? Where do I go with this? And I love having those conversations. I try and connect with fresh college graduates, or even, early college students, as much as I can, because gosh, what I would have done to have had that conversation with people who I wanted to be like. And though I'm not in any way implying anyone wants to be like me, I think that there's a lot to learn that I'm happy to share about my journey in hopes that it could help them. I have been, and I think that's the kind of the question that you ask yourself as you're growing up, like, what kind of person have you been? Because that's the kind of person you will carry into the world, into the working world. And I have always been someone who has wanted to save the world, help the world, do charitable things, volunteer, and join groups of people who are doing that. So even in high school, I was part of our student council, and through engaging in that, ultimately got to be the president of our student council, and part of our band, and through that got to be the drum major of our band, and those kinds of things. So those patterns really kind of played a part in how I ended up in this role. I wasn't trying to become the CEO of anything, but I was always trying to lead. I was always trying to help. I was always trying to be the change. And so that resulted in how I ended up here. That's kind of a little bit of that story. Even in college, there are ways to participate, and those things will matter. Those behaviors will matter, not the things. Yeah. The things that end up on the page, someone may connect with that, or that might create a relationship for you, but it's really the habits you develop that will apply for the rest of your life.
Yeah, that's so powerful. And I like how you even gave different glimpses of where that leadership would kind of shine. It's not like anyone's looking at your resume and saying like, oh, you ended up being the leader of the drum major. Wow.
Yeah.
Like, but it's those characteristics that you're practicing something in a seemingly insignificant space. And so exactly. Often, I think that a lot of young people may have aspirations to be in some type of leadership, but they think that it's like almost like a lottery ticket, that just one day the opportunity will arrive, rather than making the most of what is available to you right now. And I like how you're sharing that this normal practice prepared you for a bigger role. And to also hit on the thought that while you almost like have this leadership aspiration deep within your upbringing and your childhood, or like different roles that you would jump into, I think that a lot of people have those desires, but step away because they feel like, well, I'm not good enough for that role. Their insecurities talk them out of it. For you, what was it like overcoming those kinds of insecurities and those holdbacks that we get in our mental space?
Yeah, that is, I think there, one of the questions that you had me thinking about was, what has been your greatest obstacle? And there are two kind of ends of the spectrum. One is ego and the other is fear. And so, and they kind of are on opposite sides. My ego will absolutely get in the way. And there is that type of person. And so you've got to be mindful of that, will close you off to listening to others, that will close you off to being open to learning, that will close you off from relationship building because you think you're so important. So being able to check that ego was really important. And then the other side of that, the side that I definitely grew up in, when I was in elementary school, middle school, I had my hair, like it was, this was me in the back of the room, the very back of the classroom, didn't say a word, very shy. I had, my greatest obstacle was fear. And it was the anxiety of, you know, I would worst case scenario everything. And I just didn't want to stand out. I want, and as young people, we are, in some ways, life is easier and better when we blend in. And so we want to kind of blend in and be the wallflower and not get noticed because that's comfortable. But comfort is not where we're striving, right? That's not where we want to be. We want to be in something that is challenging, that will help us grow. You're not going to find that in comfort. And so one of the things that has helped me, and I am a very anxious prone person, and I still am. It kind of has been my proclivity as a kid, but has always been something that I struggle with. One of the things that I ask myself is, what is the worst thing that could happen? You know, if it's a no, or if it's a, you know, a mistake, like what's the worst thing that could happen there? And so for instance, rejection is a big thing. What's, you know, I have to, in my nonprofit world, have to ask for donations to Rise Recovery. If the worst thing that could happen is that someone says, no, not now, then keep going. So I try and talk myself out of that. I also have realized that not making choices, indecisions due to shyness or fear of failure or fear of looking ridiculous is just life wasted, is opportunity wasted. And so you only have one life to live. And so to just not ever try, to not ever see what could happen, you've just wasted that token of opportunity. And so I try and remind myself of that because I don't want to let fear paralyze me. And then the other thing is, like, I stopped caring what other people thought to a degree. Obviously you want to have principles, you want to have standards, but your standard should not be what other people think of you. And we live in a life, in a world now where the more you put yourself out there, the more trolls exist, the more you're going to get that. To learn to not care what people you don't even know think of you is such an important lesson. Surround yourself, you know, you really should be taking your feedback from people that you respect, that you admire. Any other criticism is just, you know, backseat driving, is someone who is too afraid to do the work that you're doing. And so that reminds me to keep going all the time.
That's so good, Evita. I feel like you hit on so many subjects, and especially the idea of playing into that fear and ego. And so often I think that we hit on insecurity a lot within like leadership talks.
But not as many people talk about ego. And if you've met any kind of toxic leadership, it's because their ego typically fills the whole organization. Mm-hmm. And that ego can be so detrimental to where you might be able to have the ambition or even skills to get started or make something happen, but you'll never be able to, like, in a sense, go past the ceiling. You become your own cap because mm-hmm. that ego stops you from collaborating with others. And that process of being able to be teachable as well as confident is such a balance that has to always kind of be checked within leadership. I love how you put it. And the idea of not caring what other people think, it's so, I feel like so many people think that prematurely.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Like you have to, I feel like people need to have a sense of a balance where they, you have, like, I love how you said that, where you care about certain people's respect. You care about how you present yourself as like a respectable person, but you do that because of the values you hold in your heart. You're not as much doing it to please others, but to give this confidence that what you're doing, you believe in. And I'm always amazed by how many people will talk trash about you the more that you do. And I feel like me being a pastor, church leader, and I feel like everything that I do is in the betterment to try to help people. And yet I have people talk trash about me all the time. It's like, it's crazy how the most common noise that we hear are from people who are often not as active as you are. And I think that how you say to not let that determine your path, because what you're doing is because you know that this is what you want to be doing. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really beautiful point to make. And when you do that, it helps give you that confidence to go past those what I like to call is like fear fantasies, where we make that fear so much bigger than it is. And at the end of the day, it's like, all they're going to say is no, not right now. Like they won't even, you know, cuss you out. Most likely they'll probably just like, no, that's not right now. Maybe in the future. And people most times will be polite about it. And so often we make this like fantasy of fear to where like they're going to tell us no, and then just go in the, like the break room and just get everyone like, guys, guess what they just asked? Oh my God.
Yeah, exactly.
We just make it like this huge thing where it's like, hey, maybe like you need to chill out and let your imagination focus on the possibility of what could happen. What if instead of that fear fantasy, you have this beautiful fantasy, which where not only do they want to give the amount you ask, but they want to go above and beyond, and they have three other donors that want to support you too. It's a really powerful aspect. And hey, listeners, today I'm reaching out for your support to keep our journey of innovative Christian leadership alive. Every week we dive into territories of faith-based leadership because of the contributions made by people who believe in this mission. Whether you want to help us by becoming a monthly supporter or by submitting a one-time donation, you help fuel our discussions on authentic and practical leadership. Your generosity allows us to help other leaders just like yourself harness their creativity for the greater good of our communities and beyond. As a monthly supporter, you can submit questions and comments to be shared on the show each week, and you'll also get weekly shout-outs on air for being a member. And if you become a super supporter, you will receive a monthly free product from our online store. To support us, please visit homerhargrove.com and look for the support section. It's quick, it's easy, and every bit of it helps us to make greater impact to Christian leadership. Thank you for being a part of our mission. Now, let's get back to today's episode. With that, in that same vein, you know, sharing how that's been an obstacle to overcome within leadership for you, what would you say has been something that you're most proud of when it comes to your leadership roles?
Oh gosh, what am I most proud of? I think without a doubt, being a part of something bigger than myself. When I find that, and when I tune into that, that is something that makes me so proud, because I get to see you get to amplify and exponentially grow the kind of work you're doing when you're doing it with a group of people. And so you can only do so much by yourself, but as a community, and becoming something bigger than yourself, you really get to see this, you know, resounding effect. I am most proud of daily being blessed to be surrounded by people that I aspire to be like. My particular nonprofit is a group of people in recovery and long-term recovery who work their program and really reflect on themselves every day. And that's something that reminds me of how I should be living every day. And then to have seen and overseen a vision like what Rise Recovery has envisioned over the last 8 years, and to see it grow and multiply from being in borrowed space and dark corners, you know, of very charitable partners, to having its own campus, this trauma-informed, beautiful space that we can provide as a gift to people who are used to those dark corners, who are used to, you know, this very either punitive environment or impoverished environment. We really want to show them that they are worth so much more than that. And so being able to be a part of that has been such a gift for me. And if anybody would ever be interested in touring Rise Recovery or experiencing it, I would love to have them so they could see kind of the work that we're trying to do and the space that we get to do that in.
You know, that's so beautiful, because especially when I think a lot of young people are stepping their toes into leadership, they often have this perception of like, I'm going to be president and I'm going to be in charge, and it's all about me, myself, and I. And very soon, if they stick with it, they realize how much it's not about them. If they make it, that is, if they endure. But realizing that the inspiration of seeing the collaborative efforts of other people, I think it's always such a beautiful thing. And the most successful organizations are those where the leader has that sense of inspired collaboration, where it's not about them, it's about the people that they're doing it with. That they often have that same kind of humble approach, to where they look back and they look at the community around them. That's mm-hmm. beautiful. And on that, on the tone of Rise Recovery and how you have such a pivotal role in connecting people to other people that are completely different lives. And I would imagine that role is really can be somewhat complicated to navigate, because it's like just the average person will refuse to give money to, say, a homeless person, because their natural thought is, well, I'm not going to give it to them because they're just going to use it on drugs. Stigma. And here you're able to have conversations about major donations to help people that are trying to get off of drugs and trying to break free of these addictions. And there's so many different social views like taboo ideas when it comes to people who struggle with addiction. Could you kind of go about how you navigate those conversations to make completely different lives connect? And what was it like for you even early on trying to navigate that for the first time?
Yeah, those are great questions. And, you know, our mission is focused on young people. And so for me, I have to share with people my own journey through social work and having worked at Haven for Hope, for instance, for 5 years. I did direct care with people who were in there at that time, chronically homeless for 40, 50, 60 years of their lives. And every single person that I feel like I spoke to shared that what has happened to them now started when they were young people, started at some point where they were either neglected, abused, started drugs very early, started alcohol very early, started coping dysfunctionally very early in their lives. And then you can do all those things, but then let's say, oh, you get a charge for having drugs. Well, you've just, you know, there's 10 feet you've just dug for yourself as a young person. And you dropped out of high school because they kicked you out because of your substance use. There's another 10 feet you dug for yourself. Now you're an adult and you've caught a felony. There's another, you know, and so that's what I ran into time and time again at Haven. And I really struggled with continuing to be so far downstream from what I kept seeing started with this, you know, this crossroads that people have. And so for me, it's about that. For me, it's about trying to be as upstream and giving these kids an opportunity to not go, you know, to not dig that 10 feet, to graduate from our recovery high school, to decide or at least have the tools to understand what a recovery path is when they're ready, all those kinds of things. And so for me, when I'm trying to speak to community leaders, this is about preventing all of those social ills that we have to live with and our taxpayers have to pay for all the time. Our jails, our ERs, our emergency rooms, all of those things. How do we prevent that? And we prevent it by starting up here. And then the other thing is that this, you know, substance use absolutely is stigmatized. Nobody likes to talk about it, but it affects everybody. Everybody knows someone who has experienced this. And even when I was raising millions of dollars for this campus, talking to people who owned billions of dollars, I would say only, maybe only one time, every other time, someone shared a personal story of how they related to this disease, how they had a loved one, a grandchild, a daughter, a son who had struggled with this, or they themselves. You know, there are a lot of our leaders who are openly in recovery, like Red McCombs. And so those are the kinds of people that I got to engage with and share, you know, can you help us do this work? And they were, you know, they were behind this the whole way because of that, the fact that this really does affect everyone.
You know, that's so beautiful. And I think that the way that you're able to connect with individuals and their stories, and you're really just blending two stories together to make one beautiful story. And I think that it requires a genuine person. It's a compliment I gave at the very beginning of when we started, but that authenticity is such a unique characteristic. And when it comes to, say, young people who have this aspiration of leadership and they're trying to navigate their path, I think that we often will take, like, a lot of young people will take like a character personality test. And I remember one time a young person told me how they took one for their job and that they came back as like, I don't remember the exact like meaning of the letters, but say they came back as a C personality. Sure. And their boss was like, yeah, that's nice and all, but you want to be an A. Like, you want to be an A person personality. And they were like, well, I took the test, so I'm not.
Yeah, you're like, that's who I am.
And so often we think like that, to where in order to be a leader, you have to be programmed this way. You have to be extremely organized, or you have to do X, Y, or Z to be able to make it work. In your experience, what would you say are some of the most valuable characteristics or skills that are necessary for healthy leadership?
Oh, gosh. I would say, to your point, and you can let definitely do the tests, figure out what sort of these third parties say your strengths are, because it is an education, it's an orientation. But I think what's even more important than that, is sitting down with yourself and really determining what your values are, what is most important to you, because you are going to be making decisions as a leader someday based on those values. And so it's so important that you don't ever compromise that. Who are you? And figure that out for yourself. What do you believe in? And if you need some guidance or some like feedback from others about what shines about you, get that, you know, whatever it takes to kind of go through that process, but decide what your values are, stick with them. And then decide what your mission is, decide what your vision is for yourself. The same way that businesses do all the time to make money, do that for yourself so that you can prosper in the business of leading yourself, because that is what starts the capacity for you to lead anything else. So I would say that's very important. The next is, and this goes back to ego and fear, and sometimes they're the opposite side of the same coin, is let go of what's not yours. You know, we spend a lot of time holding on to either the expectations of others or the burdens of anxiety. You know, let go of what's not yours. Give that to God to handle so that you can focus on what it is you can control. And that's typically just yourself. You know, practice new things all the time. Stretch yourself, get out of your comfort zone, learn how to expand your tolerance for discomfort, because that will help carry you in times of stress. And to be there and stand in it and deal with it, which is what leaders do, instead of back out of it and numb out, which is what everybody else does. And if that's what you want to pursue, is that leadership, then you have to learn how to be able to stand in that discomfort. The only way to do that is to practice it. It doesn't have to be in a big, just like we talked about, those insignificant things. Join a class you've never, you know, practice a skill you've never practiced. Those kinds of things will help you ultimately in the long run. When it matters. And then understand, like we talked about humility, that everyone has something to teach you. Everyone that you engage with, whether it's, you know, these are values I don't aspire to, or, you know, this is a kindness I wish that I could bring onto my, you know, these kind, everyone has something to teach you. So be open to that. And finally, this is one thing that I see a lot of kids struggle with because they want to figure it out on their own. Ask for help at any age. That never changes. Even as the CEO of a company, I still raise my hand and say, hey, can someone help make this introduction for me? Can someone invite me to this thing so I can meet this person?
Right.
You know, I get that you've just earned an awesome degree or you've just achieved a great thing. We always need each other to help get us to the next level. And that's maybe a kinder way of saying it's all about who you know, because I hear that a lot and that can be very discouraging to people. But really, it's not that. It's about being willing to ask for help. And that never ceases to support the work that I'm trying to do, even at my age.
You know, those are some really powerful qualities. You know, you're hitting on things like the idea of understanding your why and knowing that there's going to be times where you're so either fed up, discouraged, or tired to where why are you doing what you're doing matters so much. You talked about the sense of being teachable and endurance and practicing these things on little levels. And I like how you said that, like, trying something new that makes you a little nervous just may has nothing to do with your role, your job, your business, but that outside work help it bleeds over into your leadership role. And I think that so often we get sometimes so stuck in this box that everything that we do is within this leadership box within the business, but understanding that what I do outside of this role will bleed into it and bleed out. And it's like if someone has a fight with their spouse that week, it's going to show up at work. You know, it's like everything else bleeds over to your workspace. So does practicing endurance and practicing those commitments on a smaller scale. You know, with that vein of trying to practice kind of like touch your toes in the waters of other things that make you nervous, can you give just some practical things that maybe you have done that helped you that have been beneficial for you in a practical way when it comes to that topic?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one is, you know, if you, everybody's got a story and learning how to share that story. And if someone's on a recovery path, there's plenty of opportunities to practice that. So whenever I'm given the opportunity to speak, I do it, even if it's a topic that is not new to me, but new to presenting. So I feel like that's always an opportunity for me to grow and learn and practice. The other thing is, this is silly, but you know, whatever you're interested in. So for instance, I've got a 9-year-old and I go to birthday parties with her all the time. She reintroduced me to roller skating. And as a result of that, I have joined like roller skating classes to learn the foundations of how to do these things. That has been so hard. And then another one is, but so good for me. Another one is aerial yoga is another one that my daughter kind of led me to that I became super crazy about. But it has made me so much stronger. It has made me so much more, given me so much more resilience physically, which helps mentally with the work that I have to do in the real world. It doesn't have to be serious. It can be playful. As long as you're stretching yourself, you're stretching your brain, you're stretching your muscles, you're stretching your ability to experience the world in all of its, you know, craziness, then it's helpful. And so those are a couple of, you know, funny things that or unusual things that I do, but they have absolutely, absolutely bled into the joy I have, the presence that I bring to work, the self-care that I, you know, give to myself that I can give to others, all of those things.
Yeah, that's so great. And I think that giving those kind of ideas can really help inspire other people to kind of like get their feet wet and try something new. And like the idea of like doing like roller skating. I took my wife on a date a while back to go roller skating, and I don't even know the last time, like maybe when I was like six, maybe nine, And I was like, you know, I'm just gonna act like I know what I'm doing. And
That's so great.
it was so much fun. Not I don't think my wife enjoyed it as much, but
Not for everybody.
but this idea of like trying things, if you try something that makes you like silly scared, then you'll definitely be more apt to try something that makes you truly scared. And
Well said.
I think that that is where you can really, a lot of people can find these, this idea of overcoming the big ones by starting with the little ones. That's great. If you could ask, if you could look back and be able to ask a question at the beginning, if it's something that you've learned now compared to something that you had no idea about, what's the type of question that you wish you would have asked or advice you would have given yourself if when you were just starting out?
Gosh. Well, as a young person, I realize, what I know now is not what I knew then. And I think one thing, one, I'm a trauma survivor. I am in recovery from mental health. I am a constant evolution of healing from difficult things. And had I known what I know now about, this field and the support, there is a the way I put it to my younger self is there's a support group for everything. And so, pursue your own health. And so I think that that's an important piece to my own. I wish I had known, because it took me quite a bit to find that footing. And there is so much community and support that want to see you successful in your own healing, if that's part of your journey. Where's the bathroom is another question I wish I had asked more often. I know that's silly, but as a woman, I think, and I'll just speak as a woman, I was definitely taught culturally to like put my comforts first, I mean last, put my priority, put myself last in the priority of things. And so I have learned how to become a leader of myself and ask for what I need when I need it, so that I can be the best person moving forward. And so that's a question that's important to ask. And then one that is more faith-based for me is whom does this gratify? Does this gratify me, or does this gratify God? Because I want to be a God-driven leader and a God-driven person. And so that's part of why my values are so important, why my vision and mission are so important. Because if I'm not doing this for God, then I'm not doing it for my right reason. And so I constantly need to ask myself that in all the, because there, I know sometimes it feels like the ceiling is low, but in a lot of other ways, it feels like you've got multiple doors to choose from. And how do you decide what those, how to choose? And that's where you go back to that roadmap of yourself and decide.
Yeah, those three questions are so powerful because I feel like over the years, almost every time that I've talked to a young and aspiring leader, someone that's just starting out, I feel like each of those fall into somebody. And the idea of even like, where's the bathroom? So many people are so afraid, either afraid of just asking something that they need. It like goes to the idea of like asking for help, to where they're holding it
Yeah,
unnecessarily.
literally.
And what whether it's like the bathroom or it's like an allegorical idea, to where they really need some help, but they're afraid of asking something so simple to where no one else would think twice about it, but we've made it up to this big thing in our head.
Yeah.
And so much of what you're saying, the idea of, is this gratifying me or is this gratifying God? And especially within faith-based organizations, I think that Christians can often make it so weird. Not all Christians, but some Christians make it so weird to where when I meet with like a non-faith-based organizations and I tell them I'm a pastor or a spiritual leader, I feel like I usually have to reassure them, like, don't worry though, I'm not a psychopath.
Yeah.
And almost every time I say that, people laugh because it's like they know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I
Yeah.
think that it's because that line gets, that question gets missed. Am I doing this to gratify myself or am I doing it to gratify God? And so many quote unquote like the Bible thumpers or damnation preachers are often doing it for like the sense of superiority rather than this idea is like I'm bringing people to God. And I remember one time going doing this simple little event that we called free hugs. We went in front of the Alamo and we just held up a sign that said free hugs, And everyone that came up, we gave a free Bible and offered like an encouragement card, a little spiritual interaction. Not one person was mad. Not one person was angry with us. It was totally cool. And we're in the public, you know, with the sign and giving out scripture and prayer. People were crying. People were asking for prayer. It was this beautiful moment. Right across the way from us was another group of supposed Christians, and they were yelling hellfire to everybody and had a mega box, like a little microphone saying that everyone was going to hell. Yep. And when I told our group, like, let's go up to them and offer them a hug. They look like they need one. And when we're walking up, they just started yelling at me, "You're going to hell." And
oh,
I was like, we're
my
Christians.
Goodness.
We're Christians, dude. We're supposed to be on the same team here.
Yeah.
And within that short conversation, I could tell that they were truly gratifying themselves and their superiority. They weren't bringing anybody to Christ out there. And it was just like not one person seemed like they were closer to God because of what they were doing. And, you know,
that's so sad.
I think that it's like so often we think that we're just doing things to do them. Like, well, I'm just preaching the gospel. It's like, are you though? Or are you making yourself out to be this person on a pedestal? Are you making mm-hmm. yourself out to be more important than others, as if you're the smartest person in the room? And
right.
so
I'm
often,
going to heaven. Everyone else is
yeah.
inferior.
Yeah. And so often we make, you know, that's like an exaggerated idea of toxic spiritual leadership.
Right.
But
ego and fear, right there. Ego and fear.
Yeah, exactly. And when it's like personified with these, you know, a preacher like that on a soapbox, but then you bring it down to just like a common church, and there's people like that on a smaller level. They're not telling everyone they're going to hell, but they're telling everybody that their work isn't good enough, that their work isn't as important as theirs. They push other people's priorities out of the way to push their own agenda. And you see that same kind of stewardship playing out as it goes back to what you said. Am I gratifying myself or am I gratifying God? And it takes an honest self-reflection to be able to look at that come out on the other side and just being authentic and genuine and saying, you know what? I think there's part of me that did like the light, that did mm-hmm. like the stage light, that did like the attention, the way it made me feel. And it's not that there's nothing wrong with recognizing that. What is wrong
right.
is
we are
staying
human.
There. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not like you're a freak because you like the attention, but
right.
it's the idea of recognizing that and being honest with yourself. So again, I think that what you said was, really, really prevalent among so many young leaders starting out, that questions they need to ask themselves. And if I could ask one last question, from the years that you've been in leadership, what would you say is one of the greatest changes that you've made as a leader?
I would say, well, are you saying like in my personal habits, or yes? Is that how you're?
Well, it could be your personal habits. It could be like even if it's a organizational change that you made as a leader, something that maybe it was like positioning people, whichever you would say it would
yes.
be one of the greatest changes that you made. And you're welcome to share more than one if you'd like. If you want
okay,
to share one
well,
from both, that's fine
yeah,
too.
Yeah. I mean, I take a very tiny percentage of credit for anything that I've ever been able to change as a leader, because it has taken so many people, and I have had to learn how to be a leader. Even today, I'm still learning how to be a leader from my board members, from my, you know, colleagues, from my team. And so, but, you know, personally, what has helped me is I have a ritual every Monday morning, or it was this morning actually, because I had Monday off. I was with my kids, where I sit, my first 2 hours of my Monday morning are for me and God. And I know that's crazy, because like, I've got quite a crazy, you know, busy life as the head of an organization, but every Monday morning I sit with Christ and I tell him what I need. I ask him what I'm holding on to that is not mine to carry, but is his. It's not just a thing that we say for good advice. It is something that I have to do, because every week brings new burdens, new challenges, new things that we have to discern. Is it ours or is it his? And I have to help. I have to, you know, shed that off, because I only have so many hours in the day, and I need to focus on what it is I can control. And then there's this story that I'm sure you've heard about, the person, like, there's a flood and this person's on the roof, and you know, a guy comes with a boat and he says, no, I'm going to wait for God to come and save me. And another guy comes with a boat. I'm going to wait for God to come and save me. And then he ends up drowning and goes to heaven. And he said, God, where were you? I was waiting for you to save me. And he said, I sent two boats. And so I love that story because I know all of us as humans receive these little moments where we're like, oh, hey, Homer, I just thought of him. And I wonder why, you know, these people will pop into our heads. And I, with all of my might, believe that those are intentional. Those are God's little whispers to say, put that person's name down and decide whether this week that person's name is in your mind because they need encouragement. They need some thanks. They may be a guide for you that you've been praying for. And so I spend some time really thinking about who is coming to mind that I need to engage with, because it God gives us our community as part of our prayer, as an answer to those prayers. And so I try and utilize that. Who needs some support today that, you know, came to mind and that I should be checking in on, those kinds of things. And for me, a lot of it is people we're meant to seek guidance from. Those are my boats, those people with boats. And so I want to find out who those are. I discern who comes to mind and I pursue those people because they are gifts. And then, the day-to-day task list that takes some time, but I try not to start my day answering emails and responding, jumping in, you know, haphazardly. I decide what my priorities are for that day. I create those lists, and then I go into the world and start doing those things. So that's a fairly, you know, within the last 4 or 5 years, I've probably developed those habits, but that has made significant change as in my leadership, and I think has carried through in a very successful way.
That's so powerful. And I love how both like spiritually and practically that makes sense. And that the idea of even taking the beginning of your week and setting aside, like, I'm a spiritual person and I'm going to bring my week starting off with God. And I like how it's this personal way that you're doing it. So often there's like, you can get advice from anywhere, right? It doesn't take much to find either some really knowledgeable or a conscious person to hear a podcast from, or some lunatic that doesn't know what they're talking about to give you unsolicited advice. And I think that a lot of times people, young leaders, get overwhelmed with all of the little tasks that can make them a better leader. And I need to start each day with 30 minutes of prayer, and then I need to do 30 minutes of this and 30 minutes of that. And it's like becoming this rigid or orchestrated thing to try to make yourself in tune. And here you found this unique way that works for your life, where it's beginning purely, Mondays, first of the week, 2 hours. And I'm setting this aside of time. And I think that's really special for people to find what works for them. Stop trying to do something that other people are doing, but see what works specifically for you and your person. And that works with your lifestyle as well, your work. Even how you said yesterday was you were off, so you did it today. And just seeing the flexibility that comes where that thing that you're doing is a gift that you've given yourself. It's not a burden or a chore, but realizing that this has made my mental health, my life, my leadership so much better. And I think that's really prevalent. And even just like the snippets that you're giving about not starting your day, letting it happen to you by checking your emails and, you know, seeing what disaster has taken place in the organization. But letting yourself decide what is priority. And I love that. That's a really, really powerful thing that I think people can take away. Avita, I really appreciate you taking the time to have this call with me. And I think that what you shared is so needed to be heard by so many leaders. And if people wanted to connect with you, where could they find you? And do you have any other, say upcoming events that would be helpful for if they wanted to connect more with you or Rise Recovery?
Absolutely. Yes. I'm pretty accessible. My email, and I'm sure you can share that, is emaureen@riserecovery.org. And I, you know, would be happy to speak with anybody who is interested in continuing to grow and develop themselves. And we do, Rise Recovery has our annual breakfast. It's our biggest fundraiser of the year. So I would ask anyone who's interested in going to save the date for May 24th at 8 a.m. We host this wonderful breakfast. We have 400 or 500 people there every year. Wonderful speaker, recovery oriented, very positive, and a great way to get to learn more about what we do.
That's great. Thank you so much, Avita. And that was May what? May 5th?
May 24th, 2024.
May 24, 24. That's great. Yep. Thank you again so much, Avita. I really enjoyed talking
Thank
with you.
Homer.
Until next time, thanks for being a part.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it. I hope that this episode was meaningful and edifying for your leadership and your growth within your ministry and organization. Could you do me a favor? Could you leave a rating and review for this podcast? It'd really help me out and help others be able to see this show in their feed. You can also visit homerhargrove.com to be able to learn more, connect, or become one of our supporters. Until next time, have a great life.